front court. Grady Dick to Pirtle. Pirtle to Barnes. Barnes left alone. Takes a three. No good. Curry back for the rebound again. That's his fourth board. Comes middle. Off a series of screens. A logo shot! Curry! Ridiculous.
Now back to Willard and Dibs. Take it away, Mark.
Okay, we will. Your coach is going to be on with us in just a moment. Steve Kerr, moments away, gives us a chance here on Willard and Dibs to tell you again about Triples for Autism, brought to you by Pettinelli Financial Partners and the Autism Society San Francisco Bay Area. Warriors made, count them up, Dibs. 16.
It's a lot.
Not enough. Yeah. Three-pointers in their loss last night in Toronto. But it is enough for another donation from Pettinelli to the Autism Society San Francisco. Steph Curry, Andrew Wiggins led the way with four each. Buddy Hield, Dennis Schroeder, Lindy Waters, Kyle Anderson, two apiece. That's 16th donation of the year for Triples for Autism. To make a donation to autism yourself or to get involved, go to sfautismsociety.org. That was Triples for Autism, brought to you by Pettinelli Financial Partners and the Autism Society San Francisco Bay Area. Pettinelli is here for you, offering financial guidance and support through life's milestones. Go to PettinelliFP.com. Steve said after the game last night, that was the most frustrating moment of the whole year.
Yeah, part 11, and I wonder he said that before or how many times he said that, because there have been some frustrating losses, there have been some bad losses, but that's a spot where you came in as a rested team. I know you were missing a couple of key people, as you have been for the better part of 3 or 4 weeks, but you were in a spot against a team that was reeling that you thought, okay, here's one we should be able to get. Let's get right, head to Minnesota, split the trip, 2-2 at worst case, fine. But instead now, you need a Minnesota win to avoid another losing trip.
Yep, and we talked about it yesterday during Warriors Live. When you look at what's coming up, and again, I don't want to be defeatist. I don't want to act like the Warriors are not able to beat a good team. I think that they are. It's the NBA. Surprising things happen. But they are in a spot, in my opinion, where when they've got a chance to win a game or when they're going against an opponent like that, they really cannot afford to lose the game. And I said that, and you said that, and then they went out there and they lost the game.
Yep. Yeah, and the way they lost it was, another kind of, not a fourth quarter collapse, but it felt like they were two or three or four possessions where you make one play, you make one shot, it gets you over the hump, and it gets you to a spot where you could probably win the game. And I'm thinking about our take it to the bank predictions and how hilariously close we were. I think you had Buddy Hield over 2.5 threes.
I did.
And he hit two.
And he needed one more.
And I had Dennis Schroeder over, I guess the number was 13.5. I said he'd have 15. He wound up with 12. So you and I, as close to victory as the Warriors were.
As close, but
missed no cigar.
Missed it by that much.
Yep.
All right, we're all set to go with Steve. Let's do it. We go out to the River Islands guest line. Time for Coach Kerr, presented by Great Clips in Sports. Success is about team effort, and the same is true for your hair. Great Clips, it's going to be great. We go out to Minnesota in January, which is a interesting place to be. Steve, how's the weather?
I think it was 2 today.
Okay.
There you have it.
Yep. That sounds like my experiences out there too, come playoff football playoff time. But anyway, Steve, you said last night was right up there, maybe even the most frustrating moment of the season. I wonder if you'd expand on why.
Well, I mean, it's a game we got to win, We got a lead late in the game. We're playing a team that only has 8 wins and missing their point guard, and we needed the win, and we just didn't get it, and that's frustrating. We've got to finish those games. We've been in so many close games this year, and I don't know what our record is in these clutch games that they talk about. It's probably around 500, but it just feels like we should have at least 3 or 4 more wins this year than we do, and last night felt like one of them.
When you look at these games, these late games, is there a common thread that you look at as a reason why you guys are unable to close these wins out?
Every night's different, and when your margins for error are slim, then you got to take care of the details. And if you look at the games I'm talking about that we've felt like we should have won, And why we didn't, well, it's slightly different each game, but you know, it comes down to fundamentals and basics, and are we making the, you know, the right play? Are we making a solid pass? Are we getting a good shot? Are we you know, are we getting a stop when we need a stop? So it's a little different every game, but it still comes back to you know, are you good enough and are you solid enough? And so far this year, we haven't been.
Steve Kerr with us here on Willard and Dibbs. I'm sure this won't surprise you. These were fascinating comments that both you and Steph Curry made after the game. Draymond has made similar ones. When you have dignitaries at your level in the NBA, we're used to people being like, come on, let's go, make moves, everything for me, let's see if we can you know, make a run at this thing. And there was an awareness, seemingly, to all of your comments about the state of the organization that I found refreshing. But the question I got to was, what do you see as the realistic or correct goal to be striving for this year?
Yeah. No, I think it's a great point. You know, we're just in a really unique spot and in a really difficult situation through no one's fault, by the way. This is just the reality of sports and life and, you know, whatever. It's just had this amazing run, and we're at the tail end of it, and we're trying to hang on to it. And it's a young man's game. We know that, you know, and we were that team 10 years ago. We were Oklahoma City, you know, we were Houston. We were just on the rise. So now, you know, here we are, and we're on the decline. We know that. Steph and Draymond and I have talked about it, you know, together. It would be so irresponsible for this franchise to trade everything away for one, you know, one final swing at a title. Yeah, I think you have to know where you are, you know, organizationally. You have to know the position of the rest of the league, the landscape, and you know, this does not feel like a time, in my estimation. I think in Mike's and Steph's and Draymond's, where you just you push all the chips in the middle and take a wild swing. That would be so irresponsible. So we're aware of that, but what does that mean? It means we are where we are. We're in the middle of the pack with a bunch of teams that are either, you know, good enough or not good enough, and we have to find out if we are. And by good enough, that means, you know, can you climb your way into the playoffs and give yourself a chance? And that's what we're trying to do.
Is it something that you, Steph, and Draymond have collectively discussed about, you know, where the organization is and how you should, you know, conduct yourself as an organization over the next 23 days?
We've talked about this. You know, the three of us have been together for so long. We have these kind of conversations, and the discussion has been had, and I'm so impressed with these guys and how much they care about the Warriors and the future of the Warriors. And I think you're right. I mean, a lot of players in their situations would be saying, screw that, let's you know, trade everything and see what we can do. But that's not who they are. And I think part of that is they're Warriors for life. You know, this is that's part of the meaning of having a, you know, a player who's only on one team for his entire existence. You know, you see Dirk Nowitzki now watching Dallas games, like he's on the sidelines like a fan. You know, and that's really cool. I love that, and I think that's how Steph and Draymond are going to be once they're retired. They're going to be Warriors fans. They want the best for this franchise going forward, and so they have a reasonable mind about this stuff.
Steve, Dennis Schroeder, it's still only been a few weeks, but why, in your mind, does he not look like the Dennis Schroeder that we've been watching with other teams?
Yeah, it's been a little bit of a struggle for Dennis and for us to try to fit him in smoothly. He's a hell of a player. He's a great defender. And he's got guts. He's unafraid of the moment, and he's helped us win some games for sure. I thought his night in Detroit was really key to that game, that victory against the Pistons. Just what he did defensively against Cade Cunningham, and you know, making big plays down the stretch. So we know what Dennis is capable of. I just think we're all trying to find the right combinations, the right balance. I think he's used to playing with, frankly, with more shooting around him, you know, and we don't have a team that really stretches the floor very well. And so there's not a lot of space for him, and he's not as able to use that speed and quickness to get to the rim. So it's been a little bit of an adjustment, but again, it's still early in the process. It's only been a month or so, and you know, we got to keep plugging away. We'll get better with him, and vice versa for sure.
You had mentioned, I think last week, the phrase that has kind of stuck with me: crisis of confidence. And I wonder if that was, I'm sure it's directed at everybody, but is it partly Dennis fitting in, but also Buddy and his shooting woes?
I didn't mean any one individual player. I really meant it as a team. You know, you can just feel our guys know that every game is going to be close. I believe we've still played more close games than anybody in the league. So we got to win on the margins, and I think the players understand that, and so they're pressing a little bit. I know I feel that way. You know, last game I made a couple of decisions that backfired, and after the game I didn't sleep very well because I beat myself up for you know, feeling like I cost us the game. And it's a really tough way to exist as, you know, as a team, as a coach, as a staff, or as players, to feel like every single play is so massive, and the, you know, the game is riding on it, and you got to be loose and free, and you got to be able to make some mistakes to be your best self. And I think right now, when I talk about the crisis of confidence, I think we're all just feeling like, man, this stuff is fragile, and we got to do everything well. And that's probably too much, you know, to put on the guy's shoulders right now.
Steve Kerr with us, as he is every week on Willard and Dibbs, 95.7 The Game. Coach, I've said it on our show a bunch of times. Man, this Jonathan Kuminga injury sucks. Like, the timing of it and the seriousness of it, with the way you guys are playing and the trade deadline on the way, what has this done to you guys?
Well, I thought he was playing his best basketball just before he went down. You know, he just was so under control, so measured, making such good decisions, and playing at such an efficient level that it really felt like he was turning a corner. So for him to go down right at that moment was tough individually for him, and it really hurt us just because he's you know, one of our most talented players and one of the guys we really count on to score after Steph. So you see how everyone's playing Steph these days. It's, you know, almost like a box in one no matter where we go. And so we miss Jonathan's ability to get to the rim and score big time.
And that's probably part of the reason why you've had 11 games this year where you haven't reached 100. Last year you only had three such games. Offensively, is it as simple as, you know, it's a make or miss league and your shooters aren't scoring? Or is there more you can do offensively to try to create more points and, you know, get to that magical 100-point mark?
Yeah, there's always more we can do, and that's what we look at every single day as a staff. But there's no getting around it. You know, last 6 weeks we've been you know, really one of the worst offenses in the league, and you know, we see plenty of stuff on tape that we've got to do better, that you know, our players can do better, and it's always a group effort. But we're working on that stuff all the time.
Steve, when, you know, there's all the references to 12-3, and even you've done it, where you're like, I watched these guys do things differently and be a good team on both ends of the floor. What are the specifics there? What did you see that you guys were doing early that you haven't been able to replicate?
Well, I think we were generating a much better pace to the game. Our defense was elite. I think it's been fine over the last month, but not elite. And I think our identity, that first 15-game stretch, was that we were feisty and we were fast. And you know, last night was one of the slowest-paced games we've had all year. And you know, we're talking about that every day, about the need to get the ball in quickly, made or miss, to get it up the floor, to really push the pace. But we just haven't been able to generate that same kind of pace that we had early in the year. And I think that's, you know, that's the big thing that we're trying to put together, is can we get back to that kind of team that we were early on, fast and feisty and get out and run, you know, cause deflections and turnovers and even on made baskets, race it up the floor. So it's something we've got to get back to.
Is part of that maybe injecting more of the Generation Z guys? Because I'm thinking about Guy Santos and how feistily he played the other night, and Moses Moody, born in 2002. Is it as simple, or is it too simplistic to just go to a much more of a youth movement to try to get some of that pace back?
Yeah, I think that's too simple. I mean, Guy is the guy who generates a lot of that with his hustle and just the way he anticipates plays. And so I love playing Guy for that reason. But every game's different, you know. With this team, you know, you kind of have to ride the hot hand sometimes, and we've got a lot of options. I think that's probably the toughest part coaching this team is that you know, I got a million options every night, but no clear choices. And it's like, you know, you go to the Cheesecake Factory and there's a thousand things on the menu. I don't want to go to a restaurant like that. You know, give me 10 things on the menu.
That menu is a headache, isn't it?
It's a headache.
Yeah,
it's a headache.
You got to pick
Obviously, I'm just giving you a stupid metaphor. But
great metaphor.
The reality is, it's, you know, from night to night. What you want as a coach is you kind of want to know, like, here's our pattern. These are the guys we're going to. We're going to do this night after night. And this year it hasn't been that way. It's partly because of injuries, partly because, like I said, we don't have clear separation within the group, and so we're kind of mixing and matching from one night to the next. And that's not easy on the coaches. It's definitely not easy on the players, you know, just them not knowing what their role in the rotation will be from one night to the next. But again, we're just trying to win each game, and every night is very different for us.
Steve Kerr with us here on Willard and Dibbs. And, you know, you look at this whole situation right now, and so much talk about the deadline, and I won't bring up any specific names, but do you feel like this organization needs to do something at the deadline, either just to rejuvenate or refresh or anything on that end?
I have 100% faith in our organization to do whatever the right thing is, and sometimes the right thing is to not do anything. So, you know, it depends on what you're going to do, what that means. And Mike is so good at his job. I feel in great hands with him and the whole organization, and they're looking at everything, and you know, it's about not only looking at, you know, what's out there, but also looking at, you know, who we are. What is our identity, and organizationally, where are we? And, you know, understanding our position within the landscape, and then, you know, figuring out what's next. And that's these are difficult questions for us because of, you know, the legacy that Steph and Draymond have, and four championships in the last 10 years, and you know, still plenty to play for, but we're clearly not in that top tier anymore. That's obvious. So it creates some really difficult questions.
And as you talk about legacy, you should be included as well. And I know you won't include yourself, but I will, because you also have four titles here. When you guys talk about urgency, are you looking more in a longer term, broader conversation, as opposed to we need to make something happen in the next 3 weeks or else? Do you look at, you know, you being here for another year and a half at least, and Steph for 2.5, and Draymond, do you look at this more from a, not a super long term lens, but at least through maybe the off season and what can be done heading into next year?
Yeah, I mean, I think honestly, we're all just on the same page with this stuff. We're not looking at it, you know, this season or a season and a half. We're looking at just the Warrior, the welfare of the Warriors organization and the franchise, and what that means. And again, there's no easy answer to this. And you're faced with some really, really difficult decisions to make, and you know, I remember Danny Ainge when he, you know, he traded Garnett and Pierce, and he said, you know, what I learned from Red Auerbach was, you know, watching that team get old with Bird and McHale. He said, what I learned was I'm not doing that. I'm not letting those guys get. He said, I would have traded Larry Bird. If I remember correctly, I think Danny Ainge actually said that. I would have traded Larry Bird if I was the GM. And that was a fascinating quote and one that I would probably challenge Danny on. You know, it'd be fun to talk to him about it. He might laugh and say, yeah, I mean, I say that, but that would have been really hard to do, you know, it's kind of where we are, right? We got guys, Steph and Draymond are still really damn good, but we're a fading team, and that, you know, in terms of our run, our window being open, all that stuff. So, you know, Mike's got a tough job. Joe Lacob, these guys have really difficult decisions to make. But like I said, we are all on the same page. Players, management, ownership, we're all on the same page. We trust each other. We're fighting together. We're in it together. And whatever direction we go, we're all on board.
Steve, that's really interesting because, I mean, you can hear it in your voice how difficult it is. And all the fans have been doing this. It's hard to find what the right answer is. But when you bring up the idea of the superstar potentially putting on a different jersey, I think fans are – there's a lot of that right now where it's not so much like, should the Warriors trade Steph? Because I don't think anybody thinks y'all
are. No way.
Right?
Yeah, no way.
But there's concern that Steph might get to a spot where he would ask for it. What do you tell fans who are thinking that?
I don't think so. I just think Steph loves the Warriors. He loves the idea of being a Warrior for life. I think that's so meaningful for him. He has no intention. That's what makes him unique and different. It's why he's not asking the organization to trade everything to go get him help. Steph is so special in so many different ways, and his self-awareness is just incredible. It's so meaningful for him to be a Warrior. I don't think our fans have to ever worry about about that. It's just a question of, man, this is. You know, can we help him? Like, what can we do? I watch him still out there performing and playing at such a high level, and he's bringing so much joy to so many people, not only at Chase, but in every arena. People are so excited to see this guy play, and there's so much value in that, to watching him perform. And, you know, I think our fans recognize that, understand that, and they want to see him perform for as long as possible, as they should. This guy is one of the greatest artists of all time. He's just an incredible performer, and we're all lucky to watch him play. Hopefully that's something that goes on for another few years. It sure looks like it, but in the meantime, it's a much tougher spot to be in organizationally than it was, you know, for us even the last couple of years. And I think everyone recognizes that.
Steve, we always appreciate all your time, and we know very well that you're coaching basketball and talking through all this with a really heavy heart right now, and so we do want to check on you and the welfare of your family and the experience that everybody is having in Southern California and just see how everything's going.
No, I appreciate you guys asking. My mom is safe, and that's the main thing, but her house is gone. The whole Pacific Palisades neighborhood, really the whole town where I grew up, just devastated. Every friend that I have, they lost their home pretty much. Every childhood friend, those houses are gone. So it's surreal. It was such an idyllic place to grow up, such an incredible hometown place to be from and to go back to. The house that burned down was the same house that I grew up in. And every time we play the Lakers or Clippers, I Uber up to my mom's house and have dinner with her at the house the night before the game. And it's, you know, these are special evenings. And it hasn't hit home yet that's not going to happen anymore. You know, house is gone, and we haven't been able to get anybody up there yet to even inspect it and see the rubble and the devastation. So when that moment comes, I'm going to fly down and be with my family and go up there and and I'm sure that'll be incredibly difficult. But that moment is coming, and it's tough to think about.
Just thoughts with you, thoughts with everybody down there, and appreciate you sharing that, and glad she's safe. Thank you, Steve, for coming on as always.
Thanks for having me, guys. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, there it is. The head coach of the Warriors, Steve Kerr, will react to that here momentarily. We'll take your calls. What would you like to see the Warriors do, especially now that you've heard Steve's perspective on it? We're sponsored by Safeway, and it's Willard and Dibbs.
Dillard and Wynn on 95.7 The Game.
Okay, I just saw something that's completely off topic, but you've got to hear this.
Okay.
This is amazing. Kevin Durant and Devin Booker.
Booker.
They have a, very good. They have a bet on the Lions-Commanders game. And this is going to end up back with the Golden State Warriors. Listen to this now. Because Durant is from D.C., Booker, I guess his roots are in Detroit, so they are respectively Commanders and Lions fans. So now they made a bet, and it has nothing to do with money, because everybody's got plenty of that.
Yep.
It has to do with embarrassment. So Booker's rooting for the Lions, KD for the Commanders. And if the Commanders win, Devin Booker has to publicly write a Father's Day card to Luka Doncic.
Wow, okay. Devin Booker from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Okay.
Confirmed.
So if the Commanders win, Luka is Devin's daddy.
Okay.
But are you ready
for
this?
That's pretty funny.
Are you ready for this one? Here comes the Dubs. If the Lions win, and by the way, they're going to.
Nah.
If the Lions win, Kevin Durant has to publicly thank Draymond Green for his two rings.
Wow. Publicly. I wonder what the format would be.
He's
like.
He's got to thank Draymond for his rings.
So Draymond would KD's daddy.
He'd probably go on the podcast.
Right.
He'd probably go on the podcast. That's what I would do.
Or a podcast.
Yeah. Go on the Draymond Green show.
Yeah.
Just call in. I just want to thank you for my time.
Totally. That's pretty good bet. It's pretty good.
It's incredible.
Yeah. Because like you said, I mean, they're both making about $50 million a year. So I'll bet you $100,000. Okay, pocket change. Here you go. I make $100,000 every 5 minutes of playing basketball, mm-hmm. and so do you.
Right.
But this is priceless. Like, priceless.
You got to start calling other NBA players and tell them they're your daddy.
Yes. Luka Doncic, a Father's Day card. Hey, daddy. You are my father. Totally.
Yeah.
It's a good bet.
So anyway, I saw that. I thought I'd share that with you and give everybody a good laugh because, quite frankly, just being real here, talking to Steve Kerr for 20 minutes, and I get it. There's two things that are likely going on with that guy's life right now. And one is the destruction of his childhood home and his mom being evacuated. And he says tons of people that he knows have lost their home. I don't know how Steve has conducted himself the way that he has over the last week. Coaching games and sitting there and talking about Dennis Schroeder's minutes and can he get Moses Moody on the floor. When that kind of disaster is happening within, that is very, very hard. So there's that sadness in the background, and that's flanking the fact that the Warriors are playing awful basketball, and he called last night's game the most frustrating night of the year and a game that you flat out have to have, and he's right. So in listening to him talk, I think you can hear it. Like, it's tense, it's sad, it's dare I say, it sounds, and I know that this is what today sounds like to people, it sounds like they don't have any answers and they're at the doorstep of giving up. I don't think that's happening, but that's what it sounds like.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean?
I do, but I guess They don't have any answers. That part of it I'm buying, and they will never give up unless they fall to a spot where you got 12 games left and you're really out of it. I'm with you. I'm not saying that you're implying that they're going to quit.
Not, yeah,
but there is a certain amount.
Like a fait accompli.
Well, and you heard it last night from Steph and Steve. They both were kind of like, we're not just going to look to gut the organization. And Steph said, we're not going to fling assets or hurl assets around just to try to get a something that might work or might not work. And I do think that that's got to be coming from Mike Dunleavy and also Joe Lacob, where you look at it and they watch every game like we do, and you see what we see, which is this team is, you know, they're 19-20, and that's kind of who they are. And yeah, if Kuminga were healthy, and if, you know, GP2 were healthy, if Buddy could shoot, and if Dennis fit, and we could play the if game all you want. At the end of the day, you went to Toronto rested but not healthy against a team that is terrible, a team that is reeling, and you lost. And you lost another clutch game, and they've played actually the second most clutch games, second only to tomorrow's opponent, Minnesota. And the Warriors are 11-13.
He said that they're probably
games.
About 500, but it feels like they lose most of them.
Minnesota's played 25. The Warriors have played 24 clutch games. And, yeah, the Warriors are kind of that same team.
Well, that's good news. Then tomorrow's game should be close.
Yeah, that's the bet. I mean, because they both play in a ton of clutch games.
By the way, we should define that. The definition is?
I think it's a game that is within 4 or 5 points with 4 minutes left.
Within five in the final 5 minutes.
Five and five.
Final five minutes
is a five-point
game.
It's a made-up thing, but...
Well, but it's I think it's made up, but, you know, so are so many other things.
Right.
Like
I'm not saying it's not.
It does tell you something.
It indicates how many games you play that are close. Although I would argue, like, if you're down five with 5 minutes left, you could still lose by 18.
Yes,
you could win by 18.
Yeah,
and, you know?
Well, but it still means it was a close game. And
for a while, yeah.
I remember Phil Jackson years ago used to talk about this, and because it struck me, because we have this concept that you're like, if the Boston Celtics play the Washington Wizards, like, well, that's going to be a flipping blowout. Well, it's incredible how often an NBA basketball game comes down to the final five and is still within striking distance. Because quite frankly, let's say you're up by six with 5 minutes to go.
Right.
That's still a very close basketball game that could go either way. And so, you know, I don't know if that's a compliment or not. I do think this... this is what dogs the Warriors. They are right there. I don't think that they're that far off from the competition and the other teams there. I think what they're missing is actually the stuff that happens in the final 5 minutes of basketball games. Other teams get easier shots than the Warriors do. And that is why that's a result of a couple of things. It's a result of not having a prolific second scorer. It's a result of being short and therefore having to generate shots with a 6'2" player who has four people defending him 25 feet from the rim. You add all those things up, and what the Warriors need to do in the final few minutes of a basketball game is harder than it is for most other teams, which is why I remain today in favor of an addition of some sort at the deadline, who might be able to mix up that stew a little bit. And I do think Vucevic would. I think he would mix up that stew a little bit. And that might be all they need to just win at a little bit higher clip. Not be prolific, but like, dude, turn that clutch record into something that's about 4 or 5 games over 500. As opposed to 2 games under.
Last year, they were 24-24 in clutch games. They played the most clutch games in the association last year, and they were a 500 club. And this year, as I mentioned, they're 11-13, and you look at the teams that are really good, and they're really good in the clutch. Cleveland is 14-2 in clutch games.
Well,
OKC's 8-4. Boston's 12-7. Those are the three best in clutch games. Orlando is next, and I'm sorry, Houston is next, and they have 4 of the best records in basketball. So if the Warriors were a little bit better, they would be in that 6 or 7 seed spot. But I do look at, you know, why they're not better in the clutch, and it's a lot of the reasons you were just talking about, because if you're a defense and you get down to clutch time and it's a 5-point game with 5 minutes left, all right, Steph, we don't want you to beat us. We're going to guard you, I don't know, everywhere. And we're going to make Draymond or Buddy or Dennis or Slow-Mo or whoever else the Warriors are going to trot out there. You guys go ahead and beat us. And those players have not been good enough to beat you. And does Vucevic help you? Probably a little bit.
I think he does.
Incrementally. But yeah, from what I heard Steve say in our interview, they're not going to really expend a lot of assets to do just about anything over the next 3 weeks.
I don't think he takes a ton of assets, number one. And number two, Steve Kerr is not going to say on the radio 3 weeks before the deadline, yeah, we're looking to make a deal. You know, and I think that's actually, if we get a little cynical for a second about this concerted effort by Steve Kerr, Steph Curry, and Draymond Green to suddenly go public with the idea of, we're not out here flippantly to make some sort of awful deal. Well, okay, let's think about this like a little bit more cynically and analytically. Like, I think we all took it and were like, either you loved it or you hated it. You know, Guru, for example, was like, that felt like a white flag. And I'm like, boy, this guy's the most self-aware star ever. I love that Steph doesn't want to crater the organization. Might they be doing it for anything strategic? I think the league, if you call the Bulls right now, they're going to be like, the Warriors are desperate. Let's squeeze. Let's squeeze the pressure point. So now the Warriors are going to go public, and they're like, we're not doing your stupid deal. You know what I mean? I think there is value in that.
Sure, and there's a lot of posturing now.
Look, you got to at least look like you're not desperate, even when you are.
Right, and you might not be desperate because you might be continuing this free fall into oblivion where it doesn't matter what deal you make. And I'm hearing Steve and Steph, they sound more defeated than ever before. And Steve Kerr actually used the word fading. Like, this is what happens when you have a fading team that was, you know, a champion a few years ago and a dynasty a few years before that. And he mentioned Oklahoma City, how Oklahoma City is what the Warriors used to be. Young, hungry, fast, and efficient. And now the Warriors are not as hungry and old and slow. And you look at last night's game, and Steve said it, the pace they played at was the slowest pace they've played all year. And you don't have Draymond Green. And who do you have to really push the pace? You've got Steph coming up on being 37 here in a couple of months. And a lot of players who aren't really up-tempo, fast players anyway.
This is what he said with all the questions we're asking and the one we've been asking you all day, 888-957-9570, and we will take your calls right now, is looking at the Warriors situation, listening to Steve Kerr. What do you want him to do? And the four options that we put up on Twitter, make a big trade, make a smaller trade, but keep your assets in place, do absolutely nothing, or tank. So you can call in on that, which one you would do, even though I'd argue the Warriors are answering some of your questions already. I don't think that they're definitely not going to tank, and they're very, very likely not going to make some massive swing trade. That's kind of the message that they're all giving right now. But you can certainly weigh in on that, and we'd love to chat it out with you. But Steve just joined us. And we will have that for you in full again in the 5 o'clock hour if you missed any portion, because he was, as always, really good. But he said there's only one question that the Warriors should be asking right now, and this is it.
It's just a question of, man, this is, you know, can we help him? Like, what can we do? I watch him still out there performing and playing at such a high level, and he's bringing so much joy to so many people, not only at Chase, but in every arena. People are so excited to see this guy play, and there's so much value in that, to watching him perform. And you know, I think our fans recognize that, understand that, and they want to see him perform for as long as possible, as they should. This guy is one of the greatest artists of all time. He's just an incredible performer, and we're all lucky to watch him play. And you know, hopefully that something that goes on for another few years. It sure looks like it. But in the meantime, it's a much tougher spot to be in organizationally than it was, you know, for us even the last couple of years. And I think everyone recognizes that.
I know what some fans are thinking, and it is not a pleasant thought, which is you're starting to hear them talk about buy a ticket not to see the Warriors win.
Right.
Buy a ticket to see the last couple of years of the great performer, Steph Curry.
Right.
because you won't get to see him much longer. That's sort of the messaging of the last 24 hours.
And that's what Steve said yesterday, and that's what Steve said again today. He's talking about entertainment and artist, and he's not talking about winning and competition. Of course, that's there, and that's the underlying factor of all of this is Steph Curry wants to win, and he wants to compete, and he wants to be a champion. But at the end of it, when you get to the end of a career of a great player, sometimes it's not just about that. It can be about other things. And I shared this with the group earlier with Kobe Bryant, a guy who was a one-team superstar, and you were probably down there for the end of his career. He made the playoffs in 15 of his first 16 seasons, and then his last 4 years, he didn't make the playoffs at all. One of those years was the Achilles year, where he played about 6 or 7 games, and then the last 2 years, they were 38-126. They were bad. He played about 30 minutes a night and shot every time he could. And I believe the fans, they came out in droves because it was the end of Kobe. You were down there, and I'm sure the talk at the time wasn't like, we need to surround Kobe with, you know, we need to give Kobe one more run. It was the reality of where Kobe was, right? And the reality of where the Lakers were in their era.
But nobody wanted to trade him or tank or anything like that. Yeah, you did. You just wrote it out.
And I think that we're more likely headed toward that. And you didn't tell Steve, like, you know, trade Steph Curry, but you kind of threw that out there as an idea in the ether, and he didn't even let you finish. He's like, no, we're not.
Well, no, and I know they wouldn't do that, but I didn't want to speak to the idea that I do think there are fans, and this is sort of the other side of the coin, they're worried or predicting that Steph is going to get to the point where he will ask for the trade.
Right.
And then would the Warriors do it? Or would Steph get to that point? And he rejected that as well. He predicts that there's no chance of that. This is the comment you've referenced a couple of times about being a fading team.
We're looking at just the welfare of the Warriors organization and the franchise and what that means. Again, there's no easy answer to this. And you're faced with some really, really difficult decisions to make. You know, I remember Danny Ainge when he traded Garnett and Pierce and he said, you know, what I learned from Red Auerbach was, watching that team get old with Bird and McHale. He said, what I learned was I'm not doing that. I'm not letting those guys get. He said, I would have traded Larry Bird. If I remember correctly, I think Danny Ainge actually said that. I would have traded Larry Bird if I was the GM. And that was a fascinating quote and one that I would probably challenge Danny on. You know, it'd be fun to talk to him about it. He might laugh and say, yeah, I mean, I say that, but that would have been really hard to do, you know, it's kind of where we are, right? We got guys, Steph and Draymond are still really damn good, but we're a fading team, and that, you know, in terms of our run, our window being open, all that stuff. So, you know, Mike's got a tough job. Joe Lacob, these guys have really difficult decisions to make. But like I said, we are all on the same page. Players, management, ownership, we're all on the same page.
It's funny that he said it that way at the end. It's literally a question I asked of Tim Kawakami 2 hours ago. Are they all on the same page? And he says that they absolutely are. And it sounds that way. It sounds that way. But, you know, let's define that page. What is that page? And so, I don't know. In some ways, this all feels like a concerted effort to also maybe adjust or, dare I say, lower the expectations of the team from the public and just see this through a different view. I do still think there's a trade out there for them. I do still think that they can make the playoffs. I do still think that that can have value. But if we're going to continue to scream and yell about rings, things could change.
Right.
Giannis could be on the team a year from now.
Well, then I think we need to recalibrate the phrase maximize the Steph Curry window. Well, if we're going to maximize the Steph Curry window, what do we really mean by that? Because if Steph is chasing a fifth ring, and I agree with everything you just said about recalibrating our expectations, I don't know, unless you are able to do something dramatic, I don't know if maximizing his window involves a fifth ring. So if we're going to maximize the Steph Curry window, what does that mean? Does that mean we're keeping Draymond and Steph and we're going to surround him with the best darn talent we can and hope for the best?
I don't know if you can know what's around the next corner. So I would answer that by saying get better at every chance you can in a responsible way and then stay flexible because you never know. And I think that's what they're going to do, which is why I don't think it's a massive swing in 3 weeks, but there might be a small one. If you can keep getting better and stay flexible to where if a Giannis or something like that does become available, you're prepared to strike.
Yeah, and that's, I think, the sensible way to do it without sacrificing a lot of future assets. And, you know, this year, you might find yourself in the lottery, second straight year.
You could.
And, you know, this year you actually get to keep your pick. Last year it was conferred elsewhere. So if you're in the lottery this year, maybe you find a young player that does make you better.
All right, we got some calls to take on this. We will. We're coming straight to you. If you missed any of Steve Kerr, we'll have that for you in full in the 5 o'clock hour. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good. 888-957-9570 is the number. And this is Willard and Dibbs.